Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome back. We're at the bottom of the hour. We had some Christmas music. I almost broke out into song just so our listeners could have some Christmas music when we came back, but that's probably a bad idea. So I won't sing, folks, but we will talk about issues. Ray Pritchard joins me from, I was going to say the cold north, but it's actually Dallas.
It's a little chilly down here today. A little chilly going on. Yeah.
Founder of Keep Believing Ministries. Go to his website, keepbelieving.com. They have an excellent devotional for Christmas that is free. You can download it for any of your digital reading tablets. And we are joined in studio by Steve Jordahl, reporter and news anchor for American Family News. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning. Hey, Ray.
Hey, Steve, are you going to sing for us?
Steve can sing. Steve is in our choir at church, and I've heard him. Yes, he can belt it out. He's got a good radio voice and a good singing voice.
I can believe that.
So he really could sing. I can't. I'm like Tim, you know.
I can't, and I won't.
Yeah, exactly. We're both old enough, to know while I was a younger man and could have been talked into some things
I
probably shouldn't
not
do.
Anymore.
Not anymore. So Steve, I'm giving you a big head now. Have I talking about your radio voice and your singing voice?
No, that's okay.
Okay.
I have plenty of things around me to humble me every day.
Okay, good. Well, then Ray and I won't have to do it.
Well, okay. You wouldn't be alone. Let's just say that.
All right. What else? What else we got on the news front?
Just breaking. We have now. It looks like we've reached the end of Senator Al Franken's career. Pretty much six Democrat senators. His colleagues are asking him to step aside. They are Democrat from New York, Kristen Gillibrand, Democrat from California, Kamala Harris, from Hawaii, Mazie Hirono, from Washington, Patty Murray, from Missouri, Claire McCaskill, and then from New Hampshire, Maggie Hassan, have all asked Al Franken to step aside.
He cannot survive that, can he, Steve?
There's just no way.
Well, I mentioned before we came on the air that the Congressional Black Caucus was upset because yesterday Representative John Conyers, the Democrat from Michigan, the longest-serving member of the House of Representatives, he's 88 years old, he stepped down yesterday after more than 50 years in Congress following former staffers' allegations of misconduct. I'm reading that from a CNBC article in the midst of this Al Franken thing. And so the Congressional Black Caucus is saying, hey, how come, you know, Conyers is forced to step down? He's black, I should mention. Yet someone like Al Franken is still, is serving in D.C. But it looks like after this now that that Al Franken, like Ray says, I don't see how Al Franken survives this.
No, Gillibrand, Kamala Harris, and Claire McCaskill are movers and big names in the Democrat Party.
Yeah. Kamala Harris may very I'm pretty sure she's going to run.
That's the rumor.
That's the rumor for the Democratic ticket in 2020, and she is hugely popular amongst not you, I know, but
Democrats. She has a following, yeah.
Yes, she does.
And Patty Murray also up in Washington. Yeah. I mean, these are very powerful women.
And Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. Yeah, as you said, these are all movers and shakers. I don't see how Franken survives.
It looks like it's the end of the road for Al Franken, which now, and I always, in my mind, I go back to this. When he was reelected with a healthy margin, as many incumbent senators are, but his first election, many people think, was stolen from Minnesota.
Right.
It was,
there were ballots found in a paper sack or something, McDonald's bag, something weird.
As they say, a lot of hinky stuff going on in Minnesota when he was first elected, so.
And we do want to say, with regards to all these, even if they're Democrats, I am all for these men getting the opportunity to defend themselves and give their side of the story. I was actually listening to, was it Dustin Hoffman? Did you hear about this?
He got into it, didn't he?
Yeah, with John Oliver. I don't remember what the what the venue was.
It was a forum. I didn't even listen to it, but I read the headlines.
Yeah. And so I listened to it, and Dustin Hoffman was basically saying, hey, listen, this is back in the 60s and 70s, and, you know, there was a lot of frank sexual talk and stuff going on, and I'm being held to a standard in 2017 that nobody held back then. And so it got a little – so this is not just directed towards conservatives or family values people, although a couple of Republicans in that category have been accused. But I am in favor of these men being given an opportunity to defend themselves, and I don't think just because accusations come that they're necessarily guilty. We need to hear what everyone has to say.
Right, absolutely.
So, all right, what else you got?
I don't know if you follow, I know probably one of your favorite comedians, Chelsea Handler.
Oh, brother.
That we talked about this in the story meeting. That's why you're saying this. Yes. Chelsea Handler is vile. Now, I'm going to have a caveat here at the end because this is a woman who is lost as a goose, and she acts like it. And we need to remember that she is lost. But go ahead.
She's leaving her Netflix show and a lot of people talking to her. Well, on one of the episodes of her Handler show that she does for Netflix, she kind of took a couple shots at White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders, calling her a trollop, a harlot, and another word which Fox even is, not.
Chelsea Handler called her those?
That's right.
Yikes.
You might expect that her father, who's a commentator on Fox, Mike Huckabee, would be kind of rightly a little upset at Chelsea Handler. Interesting the tack that he took. This was Mr. Huckabee on Fox and Friends this morning. Cut 7, Brent.
I know you're probably expecting me to be very angry about it, but truthfully, when I read what she said and then I watched it, I felt sorry for her. I feel sad for Chelsea Handler. She seems like a very angry and bitter person. Look, she's almost as old as me, so this is at a point of her life. She needs to start mellowing out, and she seems to be just in a rage. And the sad thing about it, she boasts about the two abortions she had at 16. I think in many ways she's jealous of my daughter. My daughter has a husband who loves her and is wonderful to her. My daughter has three delightful children. She's a happy, balanced person. She enjoys life. She's a pretty straight-laced person, goes to church, and lives a life Chelsea Handler has never known. And I really think that there's something deep inside of Chelsea Handler that says, gee, I've missed out on a lot. I could be raising children, but I aborted them. I know that's harsh, but look, I'm not angry at her. I feel for her. I truly feel sorry for her. And I feel that she's lashing out at a life that she just doesn't understand and has never been able to embrace. And that's sad. So no reason to be angry at Chelsea. You know, pray for her that she'll find some peace because she doesn't have it right now. It's pretty evident by the tone of voice that she's an angry, bitter, and frankly, lonely person.
That is one of the most amazing gospel-centered, compassionate responses I've ever heard from someone who could.
I might not be so generous.
That's right.
With my daughter.
I tend to be a little hot-headed, he's right. We got to remember there's a song when we were talking about this story. I meant to go find the words to it. There's a song from and I can't remember the group. The name of the song was "Long Arm of the Lord." It's Wayne Watson.
Oh yeah,
it's a Wayne Watson song, and the whole song is about nobody is so far away that God can't reach them, and he mentions the fact that the people that Christians often mock or look down our nose at are just as able to be saved and sanctified by the Word of God and productive and fruitful members of the kingdom as we are, hopefully, because God could have left us in our sin. And I like his attitude. Ray, I wanted us to play this. It may seem like a minor thing, but I did want to hear the heart of a former pastor, okay, Mike Huckabee, who was also governor of Arkansas, pretty extraordinary attitude, isn't it?
You know, the Bible says we're to speak the truth with love. And sometimes we get angry. Look, if it's our kids, right, now grandkids, all bets are off, right? We want to come back roaring. Well, Mike Huckabee, he spoke with the truth. with compassion, with honesty, just a little leavening of humor in there. He handled that just about as well as it could be handled. It's a great answer about Chelsea Handler, but it's also a great example of how under pressure you can speak the truth and speak it kindly and speak it in love and really have a tremendous influence. Whereas if you blow your top,
right,
you know, you're going to make things much worse.
Yeah, and you lose all ability to reach not only Chelsea Handler. Of course, it's God's ability we're talking about. God reaches people. But you lose the opportunity, let me put it that way, as it says in 2 Timothy. I don't want to get into preaching mode because we'll spend. Yeah, but Paul says in 2 Timothy, you know, chapter 2, that we are not to be combative and I think argumentative in an angry way. We need to be, you know, patient and able to teach. And that gives, in a sense, the opportunity for the Holy Spirit to work because people don't harden their heart. And so I wanted us to play this because this not only deals with Chelsea Handler, all the people that we find are in opposition to what we're saying here at AFA or when we're preaching the gospel, we need to remember that statement and that kind of attitude from Governor Huckabee, because there are a lot of things more important than politics at stake or even culture. There are souls at stake.
Absolutely.
All right, Steve, what else we got?
I read a great article from David French at the National Review, and he's talking about four takeaways that we can get from yesterday's arguments at the Supreme Court with regard to Masterpiece Cake Shop.
Right.
Now, I know you guys have spent a lot of time already talking about this, so let me just be brief and reiterate to you the 4 points that David French took away from these. First, that the issue in the Masterpiece Cake Shop is the artistic message of Jack Phillips. It is not the identity of the customer. We know this because, as Abe, I think, said, he has served gay customers. In fact, what David French writes, Masterpiece Cake Shop not only serves gay customers, it would sell a gay couple a wedding cake if it was just something that was sitting on the shelf.
Yes, I had not heard that before. Our story meeting this morning, that's new and that's interesting.
It was prompted by a question from Justice Ginsburg, who asked, what if it's an item off the shelf? That is, they don't commission a cake just for them, but they walk into the shop, see a lovely cake, and they say, we'd like to purchase it for the celebration of our marriage tonight. Colorado law would prohibit that. Would you claim that you are entitled to an exemption? And Kirsten Wagner, who was arguing this case before the Supreme Court, said, absolutely not. She wouldn't exempt it. She wouldn't say that Jack has the right to say, I won't sell you that cake off the shelf. Compelled speech doctrine is triggered by compelled speech in the context of a pre-made cake. That's not compelled speech. So this is a way to prove that it's not about that he an animus towards gay people. It's about his speech. Second, the justices were less concerned with the facts of the case than they were drawing some sort of line. For example, how far does compelled speech extend? Does it cover a wide array of goods and services? And David French notes that that's often a way that justices start reaching out to people who are on the opposite ideological side of the fence to try to put together a coalition. Third, several justices were concerned with the apparent anti-religious animus expressed by members of the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. That's the commission that found Jack guilty of discrimination. And Justice Kennedy asked, he said, the Commissioner Hess says freedom of religion is used to discriminate is a despicable piece of rhetoric and everything. Justice Kennedy say, do you avow or disapprove that statement? Mr. Yeager, arguing for the gay couple, said, I would not have counseled my clients to make that statement. And they went on. So in many progressives have played the bigotry card since the inception of the case, but Justice Kennedy raises the possibility that the true bigots may have been the government officials who punished Jack Phillips.
That would be awesome. And that makes it into the final decision.
And then number four, Justice Kennedy took a broader shot at the whole idea of identity politics. Quoting from him, he says, this whole concept of identity is slightly... He says, look, I have nothing, and the reason I pause here is because the pause is in the transcript. I have nothing against gay people. He says, Justice Kennedy says, supposing Jack Phillips says, look, I have nothing against gay people, but I just don't think they should have a marriage because it's contrary to my beliefs. It's not their identity. It's what they're doing. Your identity is just too facile or easy. It's just too easy of a cop-out, says Justice Kennedy. And says David French, yes, 1,000 times yes, a person's actions are not the same thing as a person's identity. Phillips never, ever discriminated on the basis of identity. He merely refused to use his talents to support actions. So those are four takeaways that David French, anyway, saw as positive.
It was a National Review?
It's at nationalreview.com from David French.
And he's, generally speaking, pretty solid on our kind of issues.
David French does not like President Trump.
Right.
David French does not think that Roy Moore should be in the Senate.
Right.
But David French does think that marriage is the union of a man and a woman and otherwise fairly conservative positions. So,
yeah.
Well, one thing we can take away from that article is that we can be cautiously hopeful. Maybe that's as much as we can go for, but it sounds like it went yesterday as well as it could have gone for our side, and we can be, well, as Abe said, it's going to come down to Justice Kennedy, right?
Right.
We can be cautiously hopeful, and as you said, Ed, there's time to be praying for him that God will move in his heart, and he'll come down on the right side of this issue when the decision comes out. I mean, I don't think this seems to me like as good a result of an oral hearing as we could have hoped for.
Right. And we did mention yesterday that there are times that members of the Supreme Court in their exchanges with attorneys do come off sounding like they're going to vote one way and then they vote the opposite way. And so that's why I agree with Ray, cautiously optimistic from some of the arguments it seemed like even Justice Kennedy was making. But then we need to pray and pray that God will give godly wisdom to Justice Kennedy.
It's interesting. The last word I'll have on this whole topic, Ray, and I'd love you to comment on this. It is a sign of where we are in our culture that what we're cautiously optimistic and guarding against is whether or not the First Amendment right of freedom of speech and freedom of religion should hold sway over whether somebody that's gay can buy a cake. It just seems to me that we have slid in where those two things are equivalent, and we're hoping, and it's
right,
it should be a slam dunk. But at this point, it's not. So it just kind of maybe a sign of the times, right, Ray?
Well, and also it goes to the point we've made 1,000, maybe 10,000 times elections matter, right?
Yes.
That we're one or two justices away on the Supreme Court going, you know, if Hillary Clinton wins, Neil Gorsuch doesn't get within 10,000 miles of the Supreme Court, and this decision is certainly going to go the other direction. So hoping and praying for while President Trump is in office for another opening on the Supreme Court to give us another solid conservative up there.
Right. All right, Steve, we are about six and a half minutes left. I know you only have about 15 topics we could pick from.
Well, let me do two more. This first one is from the Russia Files.
Ooh. I love it.
I do.
That's great.
So, yes, last week, Mr. Mueller, Robert Mueller, the special investigator for the Trump-Russia collusion investigation, had to let go of one of his agents, Peter Strzok. Now, Mr. Strzok, it was found out, had exchanged some very anti-Trump and pro-Hillary Clinton messages with, as it turns out, something that's not relevant to this discussion, but with a person that he was having an extramarital affair with. but these things were exchanged and revealed, and so it showed a very strong bias. In addition, Mr. Strzok was part of the team responsible for altering the FBI's conclusions that Ms. Clinton in the email scandal was grossly negligent was extremely careless as opposed to grossly negligent. Extremely careless is a throwaway line that you can use. When you say somebody is grossly negligent, that is a legal charge If the FBI says somebody is grossly negligent, they have to follow that up pretty much.
It's in the law. That language is in the law. This is actions that are grossly negligent are illegal.
And there's a legal definition and a whole bunch of background as to what grossly negligent is. And so that was the line that the Mr. Comey, James Comey, was going to put in the famous press conference where he said that Hillary Clinton was extremely careless, but nonetheless he wasn't going to bring any charges. This is before the election. And he was going to say that they were grossly negligent. And Mr. Strzok pointed out that, well, you'd have to follow that up with some charges. And obviously, saying this before they even interviewed Mrs. Clinton in the middle of this investigation, obviously we don't want this investigation to end up there, so we're going to go ahead and tweak the language now so that we can find a way. And then Mr. Comey starts drafting his letter of exoneration shortly thereafter. Again,
before interviewing
Clinton or before Clinton. Anything was out, and when they and was instructed not by by Loretta Lynch to call this thing a matter, not an investigation. So the Obama Justice Department and their bias is all over this case. You just can't avoid it. Everywhere you look, it's someone covering for Ms. Clinton, trying to make sure that she escapes justice.
I read editorial from the New York Post this morning. It's titled "Latest Revelations Make the Entire Collusion Probe Look Like a Partisan Hit." And in this editorial from the New York Post, it lists five or six other things that Peter Strzok was involved in, that in terms of the possible Clinton investigations that never materialized, to signing the documents that opened the ensuing collusion probe, all these kinds of things, conducted the FBI interviews of Clinton and her top aides, Cheryl Mills and Uma Abedin. So this guy, as well as others, I mean, this thing is heating up. The bias on this Robert Mueller team is extraordinary, and I hope the public gets to hear those things as well.
Brady, just let me just do one more thing. We got a minute or two, just a little fun thing. Yesterday, John McCain was out, and he took a look at his Twitter feed.
Right.
And he saw that he was 74 followers shy of 3 million. But that's a milestone, he said, I'd like to have on my Twitter account, 3 million people. So he tweets out. He says, we're only 74 Twitter followers away from 3 million. Spread the word and help us reach the big milestone. You know what happened? A couple hours later, there were 20,000 people short.
What conclusion do you draw from that, Steve?
As somebody started forwarding the message, hashtag unfollow McCain.
Oh, man. The power of the viral power of social
that's
media.
Right.
So he needed 75 and lost 20,000. Ouch.
That's what happened. And then later in the day, he somehow miraculously got the 20,074 he needed to cross the 3 million mark. So some people are thinking it was maybe a bot.
Now, what is that?
A bot would be a way that you can do computer stuff that's done for you. It's a program that repeats over and over and over the same commands.
So those aren't real followers. Well, listen, he finally did make to 3 million. That's more than twice as many Twitter followers than I have.
Yeah,
more than twice.
Between him and I, we have 3 million.
Way more than twice. Way more.
I don't even have a Twitter feed. I'm embarrassed to find out how few people I'd actually have following me. All right, folks, that is all the time we have for today's issues here on American Family Radio. Tim Wildman and Walker Wildman will be back in the saddle tomorrow. Most of you, I'm sure all of you, are glad to hear that. More great programming straight ahead on American Family Radio. For Ray Pritchard, Steve Jordahl, Fred Jackson, and Ed Vitagliano, thank you for listening.